Enjoy yourself when you're young. Buy these things and earn this money and do it while you're young.
Carl, are you the most expensive car dealership in the UK?
No, we are not the most expensive. We sell very expensive cars, but they're great value for money.
So the stock you've got in here, what's the total stock? What's the value?
Our stock ranges. The price I give you today might be a lot different tomorrow, either way. But at the minute, it's around £24 million.
Wow, of cars in this building?
Of cars in this building, yep.
Yeah, wow.
All for sale, except for that one.
Not at the right money?
Not at the right money.
So you wouldn't sell that for 10 million?
Yeah, I'd sell it. But 10 million wouldn't be the right money.
No.
It would be the wrong money.
Yeah.
That's why I'd sell it.
Oh, that'd be the right money for you.
Exactly.
So, okay, good answer. You're not the most expensive, but do you think you have
some of the most expensive cars in the world, yes.
Yeah. Was that your goal?
Was that our goal? No, not really. My father started this business 50 years ago. So this is our 50th year this year. Wow. 2023 is our 50th
Congratulations.
Year. Thank you very much. Although most of the congratulations is due to him. I joined this business 23 years ago. So I was 12 years old when I joined this business. I come straight out of primary school, straight into business.
So were you still going to school?
Nope.
You left school at 12
mm-hmm.
to work in this business?
Yep.
Oh, man. I actually think that's brilliant. Like, if I pulled my 12-year-old out of school, he's 11, to be an entrepreneur, my wife would probably divorce me.
It wasn't a thing that was pushed on me and my brother. I've got an older brother who sort of done all these steps before me, if you will. He's 4 years older than me. It was a choice that we both wanted to do. And obviously, after seeing my brother do it before me...
So did he... Quit school at 12.
He'd done the same thing, primary school, straight into the car business, became a great success. And then I was like, right, I want to do that. So my dad was like, what do you want to do? I told him, I said, school does not interest me. Only because when I finished school, even as a kid, I was 7 years old. As soon as I finished school, I didn't run home and play the PlayStation. I came into my dad's office, couldn't wait to see, what have you bought today? What have you sold today? Where's that car? Oh, he's got, a purple Lamborghini Diablo's come in today, kind of stuff. And I was just sitting in the office with him until dinner time and then bedtime. So I just wanted to do that 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And, we went from, I remember when we had probably 15 cars. And that was the stock then, 15 cars. And now we carry 65 to 70 cars at any one time. If we have 55 cars, we're low. We need to buy some cars.
Right.
And obviously the cars back then weren't the likes of, well, obviously money was different back then as well. But, at this floor, there's not much on this floor that's less than £1 million.
Yeah.
So, it's you just evolve.
Mm.
We didn't set out to sell the most expensive cars in the world. It just happened.
Yeah. So... Do you think other kids should leave school before 18 to pursue their dream?
Well, I'm in this situation at the minute because I've got three kids. And I have
got... And how old are they?
5, 4, and 3.
Right.
And when we looked for schools for my 5 and 4-year-old, like not nursery as in primary schools, I didn't have a private education. I went to the local school at the top of the road that learnt me how to... read, write, and fight. Like that was it. And I didn't really want that for my kids. I wanted my kids because I feel education is really, really important. And there's times that I wish I was more educated academically. But you know what?
He says surrounded by a million.
Yeah, you know what? I say this to some people, friends and customers, and they say, Carl, you would have never achieved what you have if that wouldn't have been the case. If you would have went to private school and went to school until you were 17 years old and then had degrees and went to college, went to university, you wouldn't be you. So, I think kids should be encouraged to chase their dream. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the car market for a bit because since lockdown, it's been a bit mad, hasn't it? What's happened in the car market since lockdown?
It's been great.
great for you, yeah.
It's been great because cars predominantly lose money. Luxury cars lose money. They always have done. Apart from the very few rare cars, luxury cars lose money. But over the last 3 years, there's been no new car supply. So people with used cars have been earning money or getting this, having the use for 2 or 3 years and getting the money back for their car. And it's refreshing to call somebody up and say, oh, you remember that Lamborghini you bought from me 2 years ago? Yeah. Well, do you want £25,000 profit? And they'll go, yep, that's fine, Carl. I'll take that.
Mm.
I've loved it. It's been good, really good.
Have you ever seen that in your 23 years in the car business?
I've never seen cars hold residual value as well as they have been. No, never.
Mm. Do you think the market will soften and it will go back to normal at some point?
I think we're always going to be playing catch up for a while because cars
of the supply.
Yeah, yeah. New cars are extremely tough to get your hands on.
Yeah.
Although the market has softened compared to what it was.
Yeah.
It was the market was really, 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 really good. And now it's
or bad, depending on how you look
yeah,
at it.
Yeah, or now it's it has softened, but we're just finding our feet. It was a bit high. The market was a bit high. Yeah. Know, cars were making money, used cars were making money where even the buyers were like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
Like watches. You know.
Yeah, I mean that's another.
You'd see some watches making 400% over
yeah.
list.
Yeah.
And we all knew it was too much money.
But people were still buying them.
People still bought them, yeah.
I suppose if people with money can't get what they want, they spend more money to get what they want.
It's the way of life. If I am in the market for something and I want something and I can afford it and I want it and I've worked hard to get it, if that's the price that day,
yeah.
that's what I pay for it.
Do you think some people, though, don't realise we're in a bubble and they think this is how it is and they're going to get caught with their pants down?
I think it's, oh God, we could talk about this forever. I think there's such a mixture. I don't think people want money in their account.
Yeah.
So they don't want money in crypto no more because everyone's sort of seen that that's a bit dodgy.
Yeah.
And that's so volatile. I mean, you could wake up tomorrow and crypto could be $500 a coin. It could be $50,000 a coin. Who knows?
Yeah.
We don't know. So in regards to watches and cars, for example, let's go back to 2008 when the world crashed and people lost money in banks and they were insured up to 80,000. You've got £3 million sat in an account. It's gone, but there's 80,000. That was your insurance. Well, why not have that £3 million that's not doing anything in a car that you can touch and you can feel? No one can take it off you.
Mm.
Okay, if it loses value, it's worth a lot more than 80 grand.
You yeah, know? I actually talk about this a lot because I think it's important to have some physical assets in your portfolio.
I agree.
This insurance thing in the bank, I wonder if there is a bank run, if you'd even get that 85 grand back.
You'd no chance.
No, I agree. So watches and cars, maybe they've had a benefit of a lot of people realising, well, they're decentralised. They're away. The government probably can't. Hard. All right, they're trying to seize Andrew Tate's cars. It's probably harder to seize watches and cars than it is just shut your money down.
Of course. Number one, there's so many benefits, though, to cars. If you're not in the car business, you're not a car dealer.
No.
But if you were to buy a car privately and you were to have it and own it and use it and it was to go up in value, your capital gains, there's no tax on
it. No.
It's tax-free.
Yeah.
God forbid.
Because it's not classed as an investment.
No. God forbid you are...
Same with watches, is it, I think?
Same with watches.
Yeah.
God forbid you're 85 years old and you croak and you've got £3 million worth of cars. That's left in your estate. There's no death duty.
Yeah.
No death tax. So all of a sudden your £3 million is worth 40% more because there's no death duty.
Yeah.
So there's so many benefits to these luxury items rather than just having a really nice car to use.
Yeah. So I want to talk a bit later about some specific cars that you think long term might do well.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just talk about some of the inventory you've got. Mm-hmm. So there's this bird here sat behind us. So that's your personal car.
That's my personal car, yeah.
And that's a...
That's a Pagani Huayra.
Oh, is that how you say it?
Yeah, Huayra.
Huayra.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, take some learning.
Yeah.
Huayra. God of wind.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's that? You daily that?
No, I don't. I don't. Well, my daily consists of working and seeing clients. So I can't rock up to a client's house in that. I do sometimes, depending on what I'm buying from them. But if I'm going to buy £150,000-£200,000 car, I'm not going to go in my Pagani, obviously.
Is that because it's not the right car to drive, or you don't want to look like you've got too much money?
Well, if they think I can afford to pay that bit extra, they're going to charge me, aren't they? But I use it when I can. And
but so you actually do drive?
Oh yeah.
Because
some
like hypercars, you can't really drive, can you?
What's the point of having something if you can't use it? I don't understand the point.
Before camera, we were talking about the Countach, is that how you say it?
Well, there's many ways to say it. I could call it something different.
Tell us about it. You had one.
Yeah, that was my dream car when I was
Countach,
a kid.
Countach, I used to say when I was a kid.
There's
what do you call it?
I call it a Countach.
Countach.
But it's completely wrong, and you'll get loads of people comment and go, he can't even say it. It's Countach.
Yeah.
You know, but it is what it is. It's a piece of rubbish is what it is.
Really?
But a very iconic car, and I loved it. My favourite car of all time.
To look at.
To look at, to own. And I grew up watching the Cannonball Run, and when the opportunity arose and I could afford to buy one, I did. And it was the worst thing I've ever drove in my life. It was a great investment though.
How many miles did you drive in it?
I doubled my money in that car.
Did you?
Yeah.
Maybe, what is it worth even more now?
It probably did go up again from what I sold it for, but it's probably come back down to what I about sold it for, yeah.
Yeah, but absolute tractor.
It was a one-owner car. It had done 4,000 miles. It was black. It was UK supplied. It was a 5000S, which in my opinion is the best variant, because the anniversary, which came after that in the QV, was a bit stuck on bumpers. Like, it was a bit too much. Horatio Pagani actually designed the anniversary version. So he just went mad and put all sorts of different, and which I wasn't really a fan of. So yeah. I loved the 5000S or the 4000S, the 400S. I loved that look. So I bought it and I drove it once and about 40, 50 miles in it. And I realized that, you know what, you should never meet your heroes. It was awful. It was so bad, I actually sent it back to a service shop where I had the car serviced and spent £12,500. And I told them that they're terrible at their job. The car's a piece of rubbish.
That wasn't what you said before camera.
I can't believe that they've sent me the car back in this state. So they apologized. I will pick the car up. And they picked the car back up. And the guy, who's an expert, by the way, renowned best in the country by far, he told me that it actually is one of the best examples he's ever driven. That's just the way they drive. So I was, I never drove it after that.
Yeah.
But I kept it. Yeah. I kept it for another 2 years after that.
Yeah, you got
just because I loved it. And my friends loved it. And The Wolf of Wall Street had just come out. And like that's semi kind of what really spurred me to buy it as well. Because I love that film. And it was just a talking point. You know, when someone's seen it in the showroom, they'd be like, oh, I've always loved them. I've always loved one of them. Until one day, a guy came in and he fell in love with it. And he said, you know, would you sell it? I said, well, not really. You know, I like it. And I did like it. But he made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
So you've got the, pronounce it again for me.
Pagani Huayra.
Pagani Huayra. What other interesting stock have you got in?
We've got a Bugatti Veyron Supersport, which is over there. That's a Sang Noir spec, which means black blood. There's only one of three in the world.
Really?
The Supersport is an extra 200 horsepower from the standard Bugatti Veyron.
Wow. And what sort of money is that?
That's sold. It's sold for £2.2 million. It's gone, going to Dubai.
Yeah.
I bought it from Dubai and sending it back out to Dubai.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That must be a bit of a faff, shipping a Bugatti from Dubai.
Yeah. You just stick it on Emirates and it's there in 7 hours.
Oh, so it's not that difficult to ship a car over?
Put it on a plane.
Yeah. Well, as you saw, you got some nice GT2s
down
there.
I've got three GT2 RSs downstairs.
They have more presence in the flesh, don't they? Yeah. I mean, they're...
It's a weapon, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what sort of money are they?
£350,000.
Yeah.
Each.
So, I'm at the moment looking for another couple of cars.
Yeah.
If you were me, with what you vaguely know about me, would you get the SVJ or the GT2?
Tough call. You obviously like, we had a brief conversation, you obviously like Aventadors because you've got one.
Yeah.
The SVJ is the best variant of an Aventador. It's not the same car as an Aventador S or an Aventador is completely different in every which way.
Yeah.
Great car. The Porsche is just the Widowmaker. Like, that is, that thing will kill you.
Well, it's that fast.
Yeah, oh, it's rear wheel drive, 700 horsepower. I mean, that's 770, but it's four wheel drive.
Yeah.
You know, that's a safe car. You know, you can really give them some stick. You got to know what you're doing, and with a turbo, 700 horsepower turboed.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, that turbo kicks in and it's, please God, face me the right way.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like an F40. It's like a modern day F40.
Yeah. I love the F40. Mm. Is that one of the best classics?
It's a very iconic classic. For me, what I like in a car personally, it's the opposite to what I look for in a car. It's quite unusable. It's very basic and go-karty. Mm.
When you say unusable, what do you mean?
Well, where are you going to take an F40? You know, it's great to sit in your garage along with an F50, an F40, an Enzo, a LaFerrari. Yeah. You've got the collection, look at me. And these days, that's what people really do. No one really uses an F40.
No.
They're too low.
Yeah.
No power steering, no electric windows. Nothing works. There's nothing to work.
Well, it's just a steering wheel with three pedals.
That's it. But what an awesome car to drive.
Yeah.
Really, really underwhelming until the turbos kick in.
Right.
And it's just like someone, you've seen the film The Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
Where they press the NOS tank.
Yeah.
And they just shoot off.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the turbos in an F40 are like. And there's no, you can't predict when they're going to come in. That's why they're so dangerous. So you go around a corner in third gear and you're giving it some because the car's not that fast without the turbos.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the turbos kick in and that's when you just spin.
Oh.
And that's happened to me a couple of times.
Has it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So you, really, cars like that, you're best just running to the shops back.
It's a great car. And back in 1987 when they came out, I mean, the same age as me, he's 35 years old. That must have just been just insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to see the kind of people, because there would have been some people who just dailied one of them back then.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to see who they were.
Yeah. Didn't Rowan Atkinson just sell his F1 and he put like 40,000 miles on it or something?
That F1 had been written off twice.
Yeah. And I think that it still went for 12.
Yeah, yeah. It was cheap for an F1.
Is it?
It's sort of, when you get to that ilk of car, mileage doesn't matter.
Why not?
Because go and buy another one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's too high mileage for me. All right.
How many did they make?
They made 96.
Right. So you get what you can get.
But those cars, I remember my dad having one of those and selling it for £600,000. I then remember later on us having one, having a few that we sold for between £2 and £3 million. Then they went from 3 to 7 like that. And then they've just gone from 7 to 20, like in 3 years. Mm. So that person who bought it at 2 is not selling it now it's worth 20.
No.
If it was worth 4, you probably would sell it.
Yeah.
But because now it's worth 20, it's not for sale.
Yeah.
You know, which is weird how your brain works with things like that.
Mm.
So, you know, it's finding one. Where can you go and find one?
Mm.
And that car, yes, although it's had more hits than the Beatles, it was repaired and it's been certified and restored by McLaren.
Mm.
So it's actually, whoever bought that car has bought a new McLaren F1.
Yeah.
Everything's new. It's just got a bit of a story.
Yeah. So these cars you've had over 50 years, do you not wish you just had a big place to store them and some of them over the years you just kept and never sold?
Oh, of course. But in order to do that, you need an unlimited amount of cash.
Of course. Because you're in the business of selling cars, not holding cars.
Cars make money for us. So
yeah.
We turn them around. It's an engine. You know, I look at some cars and I think, God, you know what? If I had a spare XYZ, I'd keep that.
Tell us, which ones?
Oh. I'm a sucker for Pagani. I love Pagani. Zonda.
Right.
You know, a Zonda Cinque.
Yeah.
It's like £12 million.
Wow.
You know, but we've had them and sold them at £2 million.
Yeah.
God, if I'd have just had £2 million then.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
No.
So that there you go. That story goes.
What other cars would you have loved to have kept?
Oh, I love LaFerraris. I love Enzos. My next car is going to be a LaFerrari. I had a black one here this year that I was toying whether to sell or not to sell, but my business brain kicked in and there was profit to be had on the car in a very short period of time. And it wasn't like I was without a car. That was doing okay.
Yeah.
So I sold it. And then afterwards I thought, why didn't I just keep that? I'd have had like an ultimate two car garage, a LaFerrari and a Huayra.
Wow.
But I'll get it back.
Mm. What's the most expensive car you've ever sold?
I can't tell you the car because of disclosure contracts that we're under, but it was in excess of $40 million.
Wow. Okay, so I don't understand these contracts. I'm not in your business. What some people stipulate.
Yeah, the car never hit the market.
Right.
It was and it was a very rare car. So if I mention the car, then anyone who knows their cars would know the car.
And why is that a problem for someone who's buying it or selling it to
Well,
know?
Well, the owner wouldn't want someone to know they got $40 million dollars stuck in one of his very, very, very many cars.
Right.
So it's just people like to be discreet.
Yeah.
And they come to us for discretion.
Right.
Hence why when you come through the gates.
They come to you for discretion, but they buy an SVJ.
use. So obviously there's three sides to our business. There's your hypercar, modern supercar, hypercar side, which is your Bugattis, your Paganis, your LaFerraris, your stuff like that. Then there's our supercar, which we sell every day. Turbo S's, Aventadors, Ferraris, SF90s, that kind of stuff. And then we have a classic department.
Yes,
Which is investment classic cars. Predominantly from 1960 onwards. So cars that were made and delivered before 1960 are too old.
Right.
Yeah.
Too old because of major maintenance issues.
Well, there must have been a massive influx in engineering around that time.
Right.
Because you drive a car from 1957 and you drive a car from 1963, it feels like there's 20 years between them.
Right.
The car just drives completely different. You can jump in a 1963 Ferrari and it's a fast car. It's very capable and it's a great car to drive. You jump in a 1957 Ferrari and it's like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, what's happened?
Yeah.
You know? So, and people that were born before the 60s, a lot of them are very old now. So a lot of people buy these classic cars because they didn't have them when they were younger and they always wanted one.
Mm, which is why I do.
So the market now is moving in investment cars. You know, I remember 20 years ago, it was all 60s. But that was 20 years ago. Now it's 80s and 90s that are really making the next step.
Yeah.
Because the people who grew up looking at a car that was from 1987, for instance, like myself, couldn't have afforded it when they were 10 years old. But you know, when they're 35, 40, 45, they can afford it.
Yeah.
So they want to buy it. The guy who looked at a car from 1960 as a kid is lucky to still be here. So he's not in the market if he hasn't already got one.
Mm.
So that's why that end of the market's gone a little bit quiet and you see a massive influx in F40s, F50s. These cars have doubled in value in the last year.
Right.
In the last 12 months, an F40's gone from 1 million, 1.2 to 2 million, 2.4.
Wow. And do you think that's going to be upward trend now forever or do you think that's got a correction coming?
They go in fits and starts. They won't come down in value.
Right.
They might stay static for a while and wait till the next jump, but they won't come down in value.
So, fascinating we're talking about the 1980s era, mm-hmm. because I'm currently looking for a 911 turbo in that. You have. So I like the big whale, fin, bad boys, mm-hmm. 1980.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, no, that's 90, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a 964. So the one that you'd be looking for is a great car. It's called a 930.
That's it, the 930.
I've got a Guards Red 930 Turbo.
In this building?
Upstairs.
Oh, okay. This might be a fucking expensive podcast for me. Can I have a look at it after?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's a great car.
Yeah.
Really, really, really good car. 85,000 miles. Genuine, massive history file.
Right.
It's been in the same ownership for a long time.
And it's got the big... Big whale tail
on the back. Yeah, lovely condition. Lovely condition. Really nice car.
So if it, would you go more the 1980 or the 1990 age?
Both great cars.
Yeah.
Both great cars. Porsche made three generations of turbo that were great. 930, 964 and 993. Bang, bang, bang in a row. So the 993 came out in 1995. The 964 came out in 1990, and the 930, the turbo, the four-speed, came out in 1977, but went on until 1989.
Right.
Because they changed them then to a five-speed. If you jumped in a 930 turbo and drove it as hard as you could, you would be so impressed. What a capable car. Mm-hmm. Really, really good to drive.
And for an old car, is it something that you can do 3,000 miles a year in?
Easy. You can do 3,000 miles in one journey.
Really? It's not going to sit in the garage for 6 months.
Honestly, you could get in that car, you could drive to Germany and back, and you'd be like, wow, that was great.
Wow.
And you're just so reliable.
Yeah.
German engineer.
I knew I shouldn't have fucking asked you that question.
It's very dangerous asking me, oh, you know, I'm in the market for this. There's a chance I've got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. We've got a really nice one of those upstairs.
Right, back in the zone. How old were you when you sold your first car, and what was it? Like, do you remember?
If you love to travel like me and you understand the power in escaping the money for time exchange trap, but you just don't know how to do it, then building an Airbnb consultancy business could be exactly what you have been looking for. Right now in the UK, there is a completely untapped opportunity through helping struggling Airbnb hosts by turning around their underperforming properties and generating you huge commission payments in the process. We are going to teach you all of the tools and all of the techniques that we've learned over the last 5 years through building our very own multiple six-figure Airbnb business, arming you with everything that you need to swoop in and save the day. Minimal startup costs, zero risk, and almost unlimited potential. Sound good? Welcome to the Airbnb Consultant. Contact us through any of the channels included in the studio notes to get the conversation started.
Remember?
So the first deal that sticks in my head was a deal that I'd done completely solely by myself. So obviously when I started the business at 12 years old, I used to go everywhere with my dad or with my brother, and I used to sort of coattail them a bit, and I never used to do the whole deal. So it'd be a case of, I might have spoke to the customer on the phone, and then when it was time to go and look at the car, I'd go with my dad, and he would just be there, and I'd look around the car, and then we'd have a chat about what we think it's worth, and then, you know, I would have a conversation with the guy, and then my dad would always sort of come in at the end if he needed to. But the first car that I remember buying solely by myself was in 2001, 51 Reg, BMW M3 and E46 M3. And at the time...
He loves them.
At the time, they were like rocking horse shit. Like, you couldn't get them, and they were a great car. And I bought it from a guy in North London, Hampstead.
So you were 13 years old.
I was 14.
Oh, right.
Because it was on a 51 plate. And that was September.
An M3 at 14 years old.
And I bought it and I drove it home. And I sold it on the way home.
Did you tell your dad you drove it home?
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't tell him. He just... Look, we were...
I mean, life was different back then.
We were given so much freedom as kids. And we were given the freedom to kind of find yourself and fuck up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, have a go. You know?
As in, that was what your dad instilled in you?
Yeah, have a go.
Yeah.
So...
Did he ever regret that? Did you ever crash one of his cars and he regret
No. The only time I crashed a car was my own. That was the first time I crashed a car. And I've got a history of doing that, actually.
Well, we'll come to that later. Have a go.
Yeah, yeah, have a go. So, bought the car. It was a situation where I didn't buy the car before I got to the guy's house. I got there, we managed to do a deal. And at the time, it was checkbooks, you know, so wrote a check out. And I already had signed checks in, because I couldn't sign a check at 14 years old.
So you also couldn't drive a car.
Yeah, I also, well, by law. And I thought, you know what, fuck it. I can drive. I've been driving since I was 11 years old, like on private land and stuff. But fuck it. So I just drove it back. And on the way back, I thought, have I paid too much money for this car? Because I've got no one's advice at this point. I don't know. Anyway, called the guy up who we've done business with for years. He used to be the head buyer of Sytner, you know, the Sytner group. He's now taken a bigger role. And back then, you could used to, if you'd found a quiet week, you used to pick the phone up to a few traders and trade some stock and turn some money around or turn some stock around. You can't do that today because no one's got any money, but you could used to do that back then. And I called him up and I sold the car and earned £1,500.
And back then, that must have been a lot of money.
Well, yeah, it was just...
What did you sell for? Can you remember?
Oh, I think it was 48,000.
Right.
Yeah. I think I paid 46.5 for it.
Yeah. And making that sort of money, was that pretty good?
It was the fact of accomplishment.
Yeah.
I had done my job that day. I'd gone out by myself, bought a car, earned money, sold the car, and tomorrow we're going to do the same again.
Yeah.
You know, and it broke the barrier. You know, I know I can do it. Yeah. I know to trust my own judgment, you know?
And did your dad say anything to you about doing your first car deal?
No. No, he doesn't. My dad is not one for really ever giving any praise. It's just, it's what you're here for.
And how does that make you feel?
Good. You know, that's just the way, that's the way I am. Right. You know, it's, we were brought up in such a great way. And like I say, my dad gave me so much. I mean, behind the scenes, he must have been having a fucking panic attack, thinking I've just sent the 14-year-old out with a load of signed checks. You know, you know what's going on here? But, you know, he played it cool. We were always scared to make the wrong decision, but at the same time, we were more scared of not making a decision.
Mm.
So, yeah, just go with it. You know, have a go.
Mm.
Just have a go. And that's what we've done.
What a great story. 14 years old. Illegally driving, making 1,500 quid.
Yeah.
Didn't expect that.
And then, you know, 14 years old, 14, 15, I'd buy a car and, you know, I've been with my wife, I've been with her all my life, really, since I was about 16 and she was a bit younger. I used to go up and see her and pick her up in Ferraris and Lamborghinis and stuff.
Wow.
And 15, 16 years old. You know?
Yeah, living
the
dream.
She was a kid. She was about 14 or 15 at the time.
let's not talk about that one.
Yeah.
So all this stock, I don't really know a lot about how most car dealerships work. Do you buy these all cash and own all these?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't do like sale or returns or anything like that?
The occasion will arise where sale or return would be the best scenario for the seller. He might have a car that maybe I've even sold him. And he just wants a bit more money for it. And I said, you know what? I've got someone in the back of my mind that if the car was here, I could sell it and get you that bit more.
Yeah.
And I sort of do that. But, you know, first instinct when someone calls up is, the first thing they say is, I know you guys buy cars, which is rare in today's world.
So
in
you
the
think
car
that
business.
Gives you an edge?
Of course it does.
Yeah.
I know you guys buy cars. I want to sell my car and I'll always give them a price to buy. Because that's why they've called. They want to sell it.
Yeah. So I heard stroke read somewhere. I always like to ask face to face to corroborate that you have up to 100 million liquid ready to buy cars. Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
More if needed.
Yeah. You don't leave that in the bank though, surely.
From putting cars.
So is it liquid in cash or
it's
in stock or both?
No. It's, you know, it's. I don't think we would get to the point where we would need to check if we had enough money to buy a car.
So you're liquid enough to buy any car when ready?
Yeah.
And do you think does that give you speed, therefore advantage?
I can turn a transaction around for a car for however much you want to say in 3 minutes.
Wow.
And it's picked up, collected and paid that day, there and then.
Yeah. You look quite, it looks like you're quite particular in the kind of car you'll take.
Oh, I'm very particular.
Yeah.
I'm very particular on the example, not the kind of car, the example. Right. I'm pretty much open to anything. And I buy some weird and peculiar things sometimes, but it would be the best example
right.
of that weird and peculiar thing, you know?
Yeah.
I've got a 1988 BMW 635 CSI Motorsport Edition. In, you know, that
he loves BMs.
And like, that's you know, the cheapest car I got. But
and how much is that,
it's
roughly?
It's a fantastic example of one. I mean, you know, you won't find a better one.
No.
And I bought it for that reason.
And how much, roughly?
50 grand.
Yeah. So you're in the market at any price range, as long as it's rare.
The person I'll sell that car to is a person I might sell a car to for £2 or 3 million, who loved that car.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'll just stick it in the corner.
Yeah.
I've always loved them. And I'm not going to find a better one than that.
Right. So I guess you must have, do you have, I won't assume, I'll ask, do you have many clients that you just buy to, sell to, buy to, buy, sell, just churn loads of cars from the same person?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah, yeah. Yeah, loads. Repeat business is massive for us.
Yeah.
You don't get repeat business if you don't give a good service.
Mm.
Because obviously you get fucked once, you're not going to come back for more.
No.
And I like to pride myself and ourselves on supplying a great service to people. And
have I seen that you're even flying a helicopter to go see him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it depends how far they are away and how quick it needs to be done. You know,
and how much the car is.
And
maybe
how much the car is. If it covers the fuel in the helicopter, then it's worth it.
Yeah.
So it's repeat business is big.
Mm.
We got some really good loyal customers.
And
they earn probably more money out of us than we earn out of them.
Well, because of how
much
the car's gone up.
They just buy the right car. They take my advice. You know, I recently sold an SLS Black Series, a Mercedes-Benz SLS Black Series. Very rare car. One of 50 in the world. And this is right-hand drive. Rumoured to be one of 6 right-hand drive. And it was £750,000. This guy has no idea what an SLS Black Series is. He come to our annual barbecue. He had 3 drinks. And I said, you know what? I said, you should.
That must be a profitable barbecue for you.
I said, you should buy that. He said, what is it? I said, it's a Mercedes. I said, how much is it? I said, 750,000. He said, Carly, I've seen these for 150,000. Like, come on now.
Mm.
No, trust me. If you buy that, it'll earn money. Trust me. How long do I need to own it for? I said, if I was you, I'd own it for 3 years. I think that car will be £1 million in 3 years. But why don't you keep it? Because I'm a trader. That's not what I am. Why don't I keep that one and that one and that one and that one? Why don't I keep all of them?
Mm.
I'm not a collector, I'm a trader.
Yeah.
And he bought the car 3 weeks late. 3 weeks later, a guy come to see me to buy my Pagani. He came in his Zonda to buy my Pagani. What I didn't know, and he did, we had matching chassis numbers. So the chassis number in his Zonda was 007, as is in my car. And he came to buy it from me thinking that I didn't know that. So when he was here, I wouldn't sell
and
my car.
And you did know that?
I did know that, yeah.
Yeah.
When he was here and he couldn't buy my car, SLS...
Did he try hard to buy
it? He tried very hard.
Yeah.
You know, the money that he offered, any other car he would have bought, but he wanted that one. And the SLS was parked next to it. And he said, okay, so how much is the SLS? I said, it's sold. He goes, fucking hell, I can't buy anything. Like, I've come to buy your car, I've come to buy the SLS. I said, you know what? I said, the guy might sell it. But he wants profit. He paid 750,000. He wants profit.
Oh, so you're open about what?
Yeah, of course. You know, listen, everyone has to understand that I have to earn money.
Mm.
If they earn money and I earn money and he gets what he wants, everyone's happy.
Yeah.
And I called my guy up. I said, look, I can get you £50,000 profit on this car. You had it for 3 weeks. I told you to keep it for 3 years, but you got it for 3 weeks. I want 10,000 out of doing it. So it's 40. And he said, but you told me to keep it for 3 years. I said, I did tell you to keep it for 3 years. I said, but you know, I've got to call you and tell you that this guy's offered more money. Do you want to sell it, yes or no? He said, no, I trust you. I'm going to keep it for 3 years.
Right.
So I had to go back outside and say, can't buy that either.
Just a quick one.
Yeah.
Because we said something off camera and I found that really interesting. So you got 007 chassis number. Mm-hmm. So does that mean you want to be James Bond? You want to be the hero or the villain?
No. So I love James Bond. I love the James Bond films, but the villain is so much cooler than James Bond. James Bond does not have an office like this. The villain has an office like this. James Bond drives a really nice car, but he doesn't drive a Pagani.
No.
But the villain would.
Yeah. Yeah, James Bond drives what he's told, doesn't he?
Yeah.
The villain buys everything.
That's the point. He gets the better looking women. He has the better houses, the better
cars.
I've
never thought about this.
Yeah, think about it. I watch a lot of James Bond films.
Yeah.
The villain's always the coolest.
Yeah.
I might see the villain win one day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But they never will.
No. How do you sell anything to anyone?
How do you sell anything to anyone? Well, first, they've got to be able to afford it, because it's pretty hard to sell something to somebody who hasn't got the money. I could try and find them the money, which is what I do on a daily basis. I try and sell someone a car that can't really afford it.
Do you mean
it.
Like helping them with finance?
Yeah, of course. And we got a good structure where we can put people into cars that they didn't think that they could get into.
Right.
Which is good. I think a lot of it's trust, and a lot of it is knowledge. If you came to buy a car from me and you asked me a question and my answer was, I'm not sure, I don't know, let me check. Well, instantly, for me, I'm out of the picture then, from my point of view.
Mm.
Someone's knowledge and, you know, it's, if someone doesn't want something, they're not going to buy it. But if they don't want something and they trust you and you've told them that they're going to earn £250,000 in 2 years if they do, it's a good chance they're going to buy it.
Mm.
You know, reputation speaks for itself. You know, I put customers into cars that earn money.
Mm. Do you think there's a crash or a recession coming in 2023 and beyond? And if so, how do you think it affects your and the car business?
I think if you watch the news and you watch the TV, then you will have it drummed in your head so many times per day that there is a global recession coming and the market's going to crash and everyone's going to die. but, you know, I'm on the front line here. Yeah, I'm buying and selling luxury items, which should be the first thing that you either don't buy or you sell in times of crisis. And we've never been busier. And like I say, I'm not sitting behind a BBC desk telling people what someone's wrote on a script for me.
Yeah.
I'm on the front line. I'm in the game doing it every day.
Mm.
And things are great. Things are really good.
Mm.
I at the same time, you could flip that. You know, we're dealing with the top 1% of the world. So will them people always have money? Yes, probably.
Mm. And maybe when things are going bad in the world, they'll have more money.
Exactly. So there's two sides to see in that.
Mm.
But I do believe what's going on in the economy at the minute is making things very, very, very hard for people to maintain the same lifestyle as what they have been maintaining.
Mm. What's it like working with family?
Me and my dad are very close. Really, really, really close. We don't see a lot of each other, even though we work in the same environment. We live next door. like today, he's not here. I don't know where he is. I've not seen him since Tuesday. I won't see him now because after we finish this podcast, I'm away until Monday, so I won't see him. We speak on the phone probably 50 times a day about all sorts. Could be about cars, where he's just had a great meal that he said he thinks I should go to.
Yeah.
It could be anything. The thing is, I trust him more than anybody. So when you're working with somebody and you have that completely unconditional trust, it's great.
Mm.
It's great. If I was to work with anybody else, or there's always that element that has been programmed in me, you know, just be careful.
Yeah.
With him, if you say so, like, yeah, whatever, let's go, let's do it. And he is exactly the same with me. He'll say, like, what have you bought today? Where's this car come from? And I go, oh, I bought it for, how much you paid for that? And sometimes he might be a bit out of touch on that car and he wouldn't have a clue of why I've just given £4 million for something. And he's like, all right, okay, good.
Mm.
What do you think we can ask for it? I think we can ask this. Actually, I might have someone for that.
Right.
That's how we work. Mm. There's no questions. I trust his ability. He taught me. He taught me everything.
Mm.
He's my teacher. When people go to school and they go to school until they're 18, 19, 20 years old and study business, they study business from a teacher who's never had a business and never been successful. My teacher was my hero, who is ultra successful, and I see the success every day. I want to learn off that person. Mm. And I did.
Is Tom Hartley a dying breed of old school entrepreneur?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he is a fantastic example. And I hopefully, you know, someone would look at me in that way as well, only because I carried it, evolved and carried it on. Mm-hmm. The way we do business, the way we were brought up, our mentality, our mannerisms, our beliefs, yeah, they're dying because it's very unpolitically correct, and not things now these days are very, everyone's a bit soft and a bit left. They call it left, left field, or woke and all that kind of stuff, which is fine. But you know, we're just from an old school generation of doing what you say, standing by your word, and being fair, and expecting the same in return. What I don't get is, if we were to go upstairs and I were to show you this Porsche and we were to agree a deal on the Porsche, I don't need to do a signed invoice with you. I shake your hand and that should be good enough. But it works both ways. When it doesn't work both ways, what disturbs me is the person will say, Carl, you know what, I got home and I thought about it, and you know, even if a contract has been done and a deposit has been paid, I thought about it and you know, I'm not going to go ahead with this car. I hope you're not upset. You know, and I'll be like, well, I am upset really, because that's not what we agreed. You know, we shook hands yesterday and we agreed. Yeah, but you know, it's not a big deal. Well, no, from where I'm from, that is a big deal.
Yeah, because you could have lost a sale from someone else, for example, who wanted to buy it.
It's your word.
Yeah,
it's your word. So when your word goes once, it means nothing. It means nothing at all. And people find it absolutely, completely acceptable that's okay to do that, but it's not.
Harry, you hearing this? So if any guest ever asks us to take any content out, we always do. And we could leave a little bit in, and I've had a couple of ding-dongs. One guy just lost his shit, would have been the best content ever, and he said, I don't want that going out, and we didn't publish it. And I've got some very famous and successful friends, and I told them about it, and they said, you should have published it. And I said, no, because I looked him in the eye and said, I won't. And I feel really good that anyone coming on this show, if there's anything that they don't like and they're not comfortable with, and they say to me, take it out, we always take it out. And I think in the long run, you don't shoot yourself in the foot. But I think now people want the clicks, the hits, the sensationalism, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Carl Hartley smashed his office up. Watch here now. You know.
Well, if you say it, we might do it.
So, yeah, no, I think getting back to the question, the entrepreneurial sort of way of going on and belief from a young age. You know, they say, my dad says this famously, you know, they teach you in this country to work, and by the time you get to 60, you should be able to have enough money to be able to retire.
Well, that used to be 50.
Yeah.
And now it's 70.
Yeah. But, you know, work. You enjoy yourself when you're young. Buy these things and earn this money and do it while you're young. My dad can't do what I do. He's 63 years old. He doesn't need to. He doesn't have to. I do. Because I'm hungry enough to do it, and I need to do it, and I want to do it. He's very driven, and believe me, if he has to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and do a 20-hour day, he'd love nothing more than that. That's fine. But he does it out of love.
Yeah.
He does it out of, he dedicated his whole life to this business. That's what he does. He doesn't do it for money. He doesn't do it because he has to do it. Which is, when you get into that mindset, it's dangerous. You know, I love doing this. I'm not going home. I love doing this.
Well, your work is at home. So. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, and I'm the same. I sit in this office till all day. If anyone who follows me on Instagram, see my Instagram stories, you know, I'll be, you know, 1:30, 2 a.m. leaving my office, going home. Oh, you've had a long day, mate. No, I've had a great day. I've loved every single minute of what I've done today. Yeah, there's been stressful times and bad times and things have gone wrong, and but I just love it. You know, I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
And we just talked about the old school entrepreneurial way, the new school. You know, all these car YouTubers, these people come out of nowhere with hundreds of thousands of followers. What do you think about all that?
I think it's great. It's a modern way. People have found a niche market to make money. They give people what they want. People like watching them, subscribing to them, and seeing their content. And yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good. I'm a fan of them. They do good stuff for our business. They love to come here. do some videos of some cars, and I'm more than happy for them too. And yeah, I don't have a problem with any of it. It's 2023. If you were to tell someone in 1980, people are going to earn millions off a video and a car drive past, you know, they'd say you're mad. Mm. But welcome to today.
Mm. Are you in competition with your brother?
We're brothers. So
I don't have a brother. So
yeah. So I think in everything you do in life, you're in competition with your brother because you spur each other on. You know, he is probably as big a motivational figure as what I have, because he can do it, I'm going to do it. I want to do it better. And hopefully he looks at me the same way. Mm. And it's great to have that. I know the question that you mean, are we in competition buying the same cars off the same person? Are we bidding against each other?
Well, the fact that he doesn't work here in the business.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, my brother's got my brother's in the car business. We used to work together. We don't work together anymore. We haven't done for 6 or 7 years. He's uber incredibly successful at what he does. He's very, very good at what he does. His knowledge is incredible of the cars that he sells. But his cars are we do cross over a little bit, because when it comes to hypercars, LaFerraris, Bugatti, stuff like that, he keeps them in stock, we keep them in stock. But as far as his business is predominantly classic cars and race cars. So he has some incredibly important ex Niki Lauda, ex Nigel Mansell, ex Damon Hill, ex whoever, you know, Formula One winning cars. And the knowledge that you would have to understand the difference between that car and exactly the same one from exactly the same year, but this one's four times the price, is just, it blows my mind. You know, it's a lot of knowledge. We're very different. He's very much, he loves the long game. You know, I speak to him every day, or nearly every day, and he'll talk about a car that he's been trying to buy off a specific customer, and it's been going on for a month, 2 months. I'm like, I want to buy a car today and sell it today and move on to the next one. Forget about that car. That car's gone. Move on to the next one.
Right.
You know? So I think he's just got a lot more patience than me. I like to do deals every single day.
Yeah. And are there any cars you've competed against each other with to buy?
Yeah. But we're very open with each other. And everyone knows us who has these kind of cars. Whether they know us personally, they know of us. Mm. And, you know, it's a bit cheeky to call me up and offer a car to me, and then the next call my brother and offer it to him. So we talk about cars all the time together, and he'll say, have you been offered this week? And I go, I have actually. What a cunt. You know? So, and then we'll have a conversation and say, well, what do you want to do? Well, to be honest with you, I might have someone for it. Okay, well, look, you carry on with that one. If it don't work out, we'll revisit it, and vice versa. The next car will come.
There's no point you pushing the price up for each other, is it?
If I can't be the most successful car dealer in the world, I hope he is.
Mm.
You know, and if a scenario comes where there's a car for sale and it can be bought for the right money, if I can't buy it, I'd rather him buy it than anybody else.
Yeah.
I'd rather him have it. We talk to each other a lot, and you know, we're sort of, well, you owed me that last one last time. I let you have that one, so you let me have this one, you know. So yeah we work together as well as we possibly could, considering that actually we are both in the same business and we're both trying to do the same thing in competition with each other. But you know what, if tomorrow for the crack we decided to sell ice creams, there'd be no one that I would be in more competition with than him.
Mm.
You know, so that's just the way brothers are.
Mm. Make me want a brother.
My wife wants me to get a little brother for my little boy, but I said it's not quite as simple as that. You know, just say I'm like a brother, please.
Haven't you already got three?
I've got three. I got two girls and one boy.
Right,
but she wants to have a brother.
Surely it's time to retire now. On
I've retired.
Front,
I've hung my boots up. I've retired about the game. I just go to the driving range now.
Yeah. Should we talk about investing in cars?
Yeah.
Because I've got all sorts of people that follow me. Some people probably got 10 grand to put in a car, and some people have probably got £1 million to put in a car. So forget the bubbly market, if we can call it that, long term that you've seen over a long time. What would you say is a good sub 50 grand car to invest in?
You need to look at three things when buying an investment car. You need to look at the make and the model and the amount that were produced. Because at the end of the day, everything in life comes down to supply and demand.
Harry, are you listening?
So supply and demand.
Yeah.
So if there's a small number of this car made, then there's always going to be more people out there than what there are cars. So that's a good investment to start off with. If you find that car and you think, right, it's quite low numbers, it's a good car, it's a bit of a sleeper, which means it's, you know, it's been overlooked throughout the years, then you've got to look at the example. Okay, it's done 180,000 miles, it's 15 owners, and it was blue and it's now silver. Well, no, that's a shit box. So you stay away from that. So no one's ever going to want that car.
Yeah.
So when you find a car that fits the criteria of numbers made and what it is, you then look at the condition and the history. And if they add up and you think, you know what, I'd buy that. I'd be proud to own that car. Then that's a good investment. Also, this is very key from my own personal experience. You have to buy a car that you like. Because if you bought a car for 50 grand, it was a good investment, but you didn't like the car, you'd sell it at 55. And you'd be like, done its job. I earned 10%. It's a good investment. And money gets me fuck all in the bank. Done its job. But if you like that car, it's not for sale at 55. It might be for sale at 70. And when it gets to 70, you know, I'd love the car, but 20 grand's 20 grand.
So it makes you a better negotiator.
Exactly.
Because you don't need to get rid of it.
I've owned cars that I've had absolutely no connection with at all and done okay out of them, but could have done better.
If it was one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, could have done better.
Yeah.
I've also owned cars that I should have sold, didn't sell because I loved it, but should have sold it. But it worked out better for me that I didn't sell it.
Right.
You know, something will happen where I think, you know what? My dad's got no attachment to cars at all. None. Zero.
That make him good?
Yeah, that makes him like, he would. I had that car for 6 days. I didn't have a driving license. I lost my license. I had it for 6 days with no driving license. Never drove it. One of my friends flew over from Monaco to see me. England was playing Wales at the time at rugby. And I don't follow rugby, but he does. He's Welsh. And he offered me £500,000 profit on that car in 6 days. And I said, it's not for sale. And he went, it really isn't for sale, is it? I said, no. He says, is it worth me bidding you again? I said, no. When he left, my dad said, are you off your head? Is there something wrong with you, son?
Yeah.
I said, why? How much did you pay for that car? How much did he offer you? Why didn't you take it? Because I don't want to. But you know what? It's gone up another 500 since then. So it works out.
Yeah.
But you should always buy a car that you love.
Yeah. They're great tips. So can you give us something sub 50 you think solid?
Yeah. BMW 635 CSI. Motorsport
just
edition.
Under 50 grand.
Yeah. I happen to know where there is one.
Yeah.
No, but something like that is a good car.
Yeah.
You know, an E30 M3. You know, these are sleep. These cars are...
What does a sleeper mean?
A sleeper means it's just been asleep. It's never done anything. It's never increased in value. Everything around it is woke up and moved, and that's just still sat there.
Yeah.
You know?
So possibly underpriced.
A 964 Carrera, you know? These are they're pennies compared to what they should be.
Yeah. What about the 100 grand mark?
100 grand mark brings you into a more modern car if you wanted one. 100 grand. What could you buy for 100 grand? You know, a 993 Porsche. It's a good car.
Mm.
You could get a Ferrari 355.
I was actually looking at that as well as the 911 Turbo. You think that's an all right car?
Yeah, yeah. They're absolutely gutless though.
Mm.
They're like the slowest car from what it looks like it should move, because it's a beautiful, beautiful car.
Yeah.
But they're not the most powerful thing. But yeah, good car, look great, really traditional Ferrari looking. You take the badge off and you show someone who's never seen a Ferrari before and you say, what kind of car do you think that is? And they say it's a Ferrari.
Yeah.
You know? Good car.
Okay. What about quarter of a million sort of range?
So you're opening up now to a lot of things, really. What would be the best car for... You could look at things like... which you wouldn't even have to go to a quarter of a million, but look at... If you wanted to buy the best example, you could buy the best example SLS Gullwing for 200 grand. And when I say the best, I mean the 3,000 or 4,000 mile low owner, you know, silver, ceramic brakes, everything. That's a good car. That's a very good car.
Mm. And then up to a million.
Oh God, there's so many in between. 458 Ferrari 458 Speciale, Speciale Aperta.
I think they're better than the Pista, would you say?
Yeah, as an investment, yeah.
Yeah.
Naturally aspirated, one engine of the year, 4 years in a row. Low numbered, just a fantastic
right car. Yeah, because I've had opportunities to get those sort of more lower numbers when I've bought the normal version of it,
mm-hmm.
and I've not done it.
Yeah, hindsight's a funny thing.
Yeah,
isn't
of
it?
Course.
You know, I've bought and sold some great Speciales at 220 grand.
Yeah,
cars that today they'd be worth nearly probably 400.
Wow.
So, yeah. And not that long ago, we're not talking, oh, let's go back in the day. I'm talking like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, there's loads of opportunities out there.
Mm.
Loads of opportunities out there.
So did you hear that about the limited editions, mate? We discuss this all the time. I'm like, you've got to buy low numbers, watches.
Got to buy low numbers.
Buy low numbers in watches.
So I heard this. So today, we talked about this earlier, after I leave you, my Richard Mille has just came into the store. When that phone call is such a great phone call.
How long have you been waiting for that?
Not that long, considering, but I've had some right influential people really back me with Richard Mille. So
yeah.
They've given me a bit of a boost up.
Mm.
Hello, Mr. Hartley. Good news. Yes. And then you have to pay for it, and you're like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
But I heard the other day that Rolex make over 1 million watches a year.
Mm. I think Richard Mille, are they what, 35,000, are they?
I then heard Patek Philippe makes 77,000 watches a year.
Sounds about right. I think AP are just under that.
Richard Mille are less than 8,000 a year.
Are they? That low? Well, that's why everything's gone crazy. Yeah.
Supply and demand.
Yeah.
There's 8 billion people in the world.
Yeah. Would you have a quarter of a million... in the best watch or the best car?
Me, I would choose car because that's what I do.
Mm.
Watches I don't really do for investment. I do because I can't treat myself to a car because I get so spoiled with... I find a problem with every car. So I think, oh, I want to buy a...
Because you know it too well.
Yeah, I've done loads of miles on them. I know them too well. You know, so something different like the Pagani is a different thing. But, you know, if I think to myself, right, I'm going to go and chuck... You know, 250 grand is what you just said.
Yeah.
Into a car. Well, there's loads of cars at 250 grand that I wouldn't buy. And I could find an excuse not to buy any of them if I wanted to.
Mm.
But a watch is what I like.
Mm.
So I'm going into it slightly green, slightly not knowing, but I like it. Where somebody else would be going into a car with the same aspect. I love the way it looks, love the way it sounds. I don't care about they corrode around the wheel arches sometimes. That sticks in my head. God, I had one of these full of corrosion once. I had to repaint it and do this and do that.
Yeah.
The engine light comes on. The battery goes flat on it. Oh, I can't bother with that.
Yeah.
You know, where a watch I just go into like, you know, like a novice really.
Mm. What's the most underrated supercar or hypercar you've ever seen?
Underrated in value or
however you want to answer it.
Okay.
Or reputation, you know, in terms of its performance or...
Well, I can use this one car as an example and I'll explain why. I think an Aventador SVJ is undervalued. Even at, let's say, 400,000. You tell me what car you can buy for double the amount that has the same performance and gives off the same street cred, curbside appeal, in looks, gets more attention than that car. Can you think of any? Say you've got an SVJ, you want to upgrade it. What are you buying?
Well, that's why I got the Aventador. I don't have the SVJ, but I just thought, looks-wise, you know, everything above that is millions so, and really incremental.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So you look at the best example of an Aventador, which is 400,000, and you've got to go and spend £1 million for
and
a car that attracts more attention, that drives better, and it's questionable. Does it does it drive better? Probably not. Mm. Is it quicker? Probably not. Does it look better? Probably not.
Yeah.
So that's one car that I can say, like, they're undervalued for what you get.
Yeah. What about the most overrated car you've seen? Loads of hype.
Koenigsegg.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh, why?
Well, they're £3.5 million. And don't get me wrong, I'm not slagging Koenigsegg off, because they have, things they've achieved in performance are incredible. The speed the cars go, how quick they stop and everything like that. Mm. But talking from experience, from someone who's had a good few of them, I've given £3.5 million for a car that's been on charge for 10 days because it's every car here is kept on charge, and you go to start it and it doesn't start. Why doesn't it start? The answer from Koenigsegg is it doesn't start because they just do that sometimes. Well, for £3.5 million, I don't want it to do that sometimes, you know?
Richard Mille, watch just doesn't start sometimes.
It must, but watch just stops. Yeah, that happens. What? You know, so they're not overrated in performance. When they work, Jesus Christ, they're a spaceship. I mean, the things that they achieve is ridiculous. But, you know, we're not going around the Nürburgring every day.
Yeah.
And we're not on drag strips every day. You're getting in a car and you're going for dinner with your wife and you can't because it doesn't start. Mm. Then if it does start, it's got an engine light. And I swear to God, their answer to an engine light is, don't worry about it. No, for me, that's a worrying light. You know, I don't worry about tire pressure monitors. They come on, they go off. They're sensors. Don't really care too much. When my engine light comes on, I'm thinking, oh shit, I shouldn't really be driving this car. Mm. There's something wrong with the engine. Like, so, you know, that's not what I that's not what I'm in for.
Really. Yeah. Has anyone ever offered you Bitcoin for a car?
Yeah, I've taken Bitcoin for cars.
Have you?
Yeah.
Ah. Do you think that's going to be more of a thing in the future? You think you do more of that?
Not the way Bitcoin's going. No.
Is that an issue for you? The fluctuation.
Yeah, it's an issue for if someone relied on taking Bitcoin for cars, then at the minute it would be difficult. It was easy when Bitcoin was $55,000 a coin, and you know everyone was a winner. You know, they could just transfer the Bitcoin from that account to that account and drive away in a Lamborghini, and everything was fine. Now, number one, I would be quite reluctant on taking Bitcoin because it's very, very, very volatile at the minute. And number two, I let it out as soon as it comes in, it goes out. So I need to find someone to underwrite it for me. No one would do it at the minute.
No. Mm. What about cash? Has anyone come in with a briefcase full of cash?
I could sell every car in this showroom for cash.
As in physical,
as in pound notes.
Polymer?
Yeah.
Pound notes?
Yep. I could sell every car, but it's just money laundering.
Yeah. Like, so it's really hard now, is it, to sell?
Yeah, no, we've never done it. I mean, back in the day when you could, in the 70s, 80s, you know, that's how my dad used to do business.
Yeah.
He just used to go with the amount in cash.
Yeah.
And you used to count it together and then shake hands and then go, and that, no paperwork, just it was what it was.
Yeah.
But today, I think by law, you're allowed to take 9,000 in cash, which is what I gave to my assistant there a minute ago when we were setting up. Someone came yesterday, bought a car. How much cash can I give you? I said, well, can only take 9. Go straight to the bank, don't keep it.
Yeah.
They never keep any cash on the premises at all and can't take it.
Mm. So how do
you... I wouldn't want to take it. Because what can you do with cash these days? If you had 100 grand to spend in cash, you had to spend it tomorrow.
Well, first off, I would spend it tomorrow because in a year it's 87,000 or 85,000. Yeah. So yeah, I'd immediately want to spend it.
So what do you do?
Well,
you go and buy, you buy clothes.
I'd buy assets.
What's an asset that you can buy, pay for cash?
Well, I'd probably have to buy 11 Rolexes. I have to split it up when I buy that.
But you can't you can't buy them.
No.
Because you can't go to the shop and say, can I have 11 Rolexes? No.
No. No, but...
No, I'm on about, you've got £100,000 and you have to get rid of it tomorrow.
Right.
So you either turn that 100,000 into 50 because you bought a load of shit that's devalued as soon as you buy it, or you can't physically get, you can't physically spend it.
Can't buy a car privately?
Nope.
Yeah, so you could, I guess you could buy 9 private Rolexes, probably not a Daytona anymore, but...
You might have to pay too much for them though.
Yeah.
So Your 100,000 isn't 100,000. If you had to turn that 100,000 from cash into your account, you could turn the 100 into 50.
Yeah. Krugerrands. Go buy gold. But then, yeah, I suppose there's going to be a limit. You're going to have to get in the car and drive around the country and do it in 9 cities, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, 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 very difficult. You can only really eat and drink it.
Mm. Do you think that's done because they're really trying to protect us from money laundering, or because they want to work cash out of society?
Oh, I think it's probably a bit of both.
Mm.
Probably a bit of both.
Do you miss trading in cash?
I always have some cash on me. I mean, not a lot, but 200-300 quid. Just in case. Mm. I don't know. Just in case something happens.
Yeah, your phone dies, you're stuck. Yeah,
you know, you always need cash.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, if you stopped 10 people in the street, in whatever street, you could go to Knightsbridge or you could go to Bradford, wherever you want to go, you stop 10 people in the street, I bet 8 of them haven't got a penny on them.
Mm.
Not one penny in cash. Everything's card. I went to Starbucks this morning, and it's so funny because this woman really pisses me off in Starbucks. I don't know why. I don't know why she pisses me off. But you order around the drive-thru, and before the window is open for you to pay, she's got the card machine on like a broom handle, and she's sticking it in my car. I ain't even got my window down yet. I don't want to pay by car. I've got a fiver. It's okay. You know? And she's car. And then you go like, oh, can you take cash? And you go like, oh, it's cash. Like, the woman hates cash. I'm like saying, are you with the Inland Revenue or something? Like, what is going on? And it's just normal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went into, before Christmas, we've got a property in London. And it's my dad's property. And I was staying down there. And my little girl wasn't feeling well. So I just walked to the local chemist to buy her some like Calpol or cold and flu stuff and whatever. And went to the till. I don't know, it could have been 7 quid, pulled out a tenner. And because that's what that cash is for, just a tenner, a fiver, whatever it may be. And she was like, God, I haven't seen cash for ages. So I said to her, what do you mean? Like, how long is ages? Bearing in mind, they're a chemist. There was 5 people in the shop when I was in there. She was like, 3 weeks. No one's gave us any cash for 3 weeks.
Wow. Yeah. We do a quick fire round on the Disruptors show. You can take time if you want, but...
I'll try and answer as fast as I can.
Well, not one-worders, but it's good for energy as well. So would you rather have 1 million engaged social media followers or £1 million cash sat there? Which one and why?
1 million engaged social media followers.
Why?
Because I will earn more than £1 million cash off of them.
And you can't do anything with the cash.
You can't do anything with the cash.
Okay. One person you don't have as a client who buys cars from you that you would love to have as a client buying cars from you.
Andrew Tate.
Great answer. Is it easier to sell 10 Fords or 1 Bugatti?
One Bugatti.
And why?
It's a tenth of the work.
That's what you said.
It takes the same time to sell a car for £1,000 as it does for £1 million.
Does it though?
Yeah.
Is that because you've got all the contacts though?
Well, the guy that I'm going to sell the Bugatti to can afford the Bugatti. He's a Bugatti client. Okay, so he's in the market for a Bugatti, the same as the guy who's buying the Ford. I've got to find 10 of him though. I've only got to find one of him.
Mm.
Still takes the same time to do an invoice. So I'm going to transfer me the money. Mm. It takes the same time.
Mm. What is...
Plus, I've got more experience selling Bugatti than
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to use your word here. What is the biggest shitbox car you've ever been offered on Part X? Maybe you didn't take it.
Oh, no, I'd take everything.
Really?
Yeah, I've had some proper shitters.
Like?
Spyker.
I've not heard that name for a long time.
That's a shitbox.
And you took it?
Noble. That's a shitbox.
Is it?
TVR's a shitbox.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to say TVR wins.
I told you about that.
That's the ultimate shitbox.
Because everyone says that. I love the look of the Tuscan. And again, when you grow up and you see...
Yeah, because it was our era, wasn't
Swordfish,
it?
That film, John Travolta. Yeah. But is it really the dog that everyone says?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worse.
Is it?
It's underdescribed of a shitbox.
So basically you just can't drive the thing.
Just rubbish. If it starts, you got a good one.
Right. Right, this is really interesting at the moment. I'd love your thoughts. There's a big push to cancel Jeremy Clarkson. Basically, he said something about Meghan Markle. Yep. In his usual cutting humour style, he's apologised. Those apologies have been rejected. What are your thoughts on all that?
Well, it goes back to, is there such thing as freedom of speech?
Is there?
I don't know. Is there? Obviously not.
I'm the interviewer.
Obviously not.
Why not?
Because he's just said what he truly feels.
And probably a joke.
Well, his personality is he's got a very dry sense of humour, that he's always grumpy. And that's why people love him, because he relates a lot to the English public, because, you know, that's the English humour.
Yeah.
I don't think he did mean it as a joke. I think he honestly really dislikes Meghan. But there's a lot of people that dislike Meghan. So, I don't know. He said he was sorry, which he obviously wouldn't have meant.
Yeah.
But he didn't really want to get cancelled. It was just his personal views. I think if you don't like what someone says or you don't like what they're about, you should just watch another channel and leave their channel to people who do like what they say.
Mm. So you mentioned Andrew Tate. Great answer, that one. He's had 6 million of his cars confiscated in Romania to fund the investigation against him. What do you think about that?
I mean, he's got some pretty serious allegations going against him, hasn't he, really? I mean, they're pretty serious crimes if he's convicted of them. It's just what happens in that situation, isn't it?
Would that happen in the UK?
Someone's, yeah, of course it would.
Really?
Yeah.
While they're suspected and not, it's not been proven.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do business with an auction house in the UK called Wilson's Auction, and they basically are proceeds of crime. Right. So cars that go through have been taken from the customer due to proceeds of crime.
So even before they've been proven guilty.
No, they sit in a compound.
Right.
Nothing will do. The cars they won't do anything with those cars. Well, I don't know what the laws are.
They said, apparently they said to fund the investigation.
Well,
but
if they want to call me to buy them, my number's 01283-762-762.
Love it. What's the best advice you ever remember receiving?
The best advice I ever remember receiving. I've had a lot of good advice. The only person I can think of who's given me good advice is my dad. Because I think everybody else's advice has got more of an agenda behind it. But make your own plans and please yourself.
What's the worst advice you ever remember receiving?
Invest in Bitcoin.
Depends on the timing.
Well, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. What would you regard as your biggest failure?
My biggest failure would be... My biggest failure is something that happens on a daily basis, and that's I don't spend enough time with my kids.
How does that make you feel?
It's for a reason. I don't do it because I'm doing things that I enjoy more or whatever. I would enjoy nothing more than to spend time with them. But, you know, someone's got to pay the bills and someone's got to give them the life that I want them to have. Mm. So how does it make me feel? It makes me think, is it all worth it? Is it worth it? And then I think, well, yeah, it is. They will appreciate what I'm doing for them.
Mm. On the flip side, what would you say your biggest success is?
My kids.
What's your biggest regret?
My biggest regret. What did Frank Sinatra say? Regrets, I have a few, but then again, too few to mention. Don't really have any.
Mm.
Don't really have any. Things that I've done that have been a fuck up, I'm pleased I've done them. You know, and things that I didn't do, I'm pleased I didn't do them.
Mm. All right, then, for a bit of fun, most expensive crash you've done?
Oh, I've had a few.
I put a Ferrari 458 into News International Building once.
Oh, I put a Ferrari 458 through the Meadowhall roundabout. Yeah.
Yeah, your most expensive one. Most expensive repair bill.
That would be it. Yeah. Completely totaled a Cayman GTS and a Ferrari 458 Spider.
Are you as good a race car or car driver as you are salesperson of cars?
Not at all.
We wanted to know this. What's your caliber in racing cars?
Out of 10?
Yeah.
3?
And selling them? Out of
12?
I love it. So this show's called Disruptive.
Yep.
It used to be called Disruptive Entrepreneur, and now we go wider. We've called it Disruptor. So what does that word disruptive mean to you?
I like the word disruptive.
Yeah.
I think more disruption is good.
Mm.
You know, I like to come into something and disrupt it, shake things up.
Yeah. And where can we find you? Where can we buy a car from you? Where can we follow you?
Okay, so my Instagram is my most used social media platform, which is at Carl Hartley 1, Carl with a C. Our website is www.tomhartley.com. We also have a Tom Hartley Cars Instagram page, which is my dad's Instagram page. He's very controversial on his page. I have to call him up sometimes, like, Dad, you can't say that. You know, people are gonna, they're not gonna do well. But yeah, you can follow us on there. Also, we're on Twitter as well. I'm Carl Hartley on Twitter and Tom Hartley Cars on Twitter.
I want to say a massive thanks for having us in your amazing. I don't even know what to call this. This is like a, to me, it's like a museum.
I like to call it like a. Well, wait till you go downstairs. Downstairs is like the Batcave.
Right.
Just the lighting, the way it is, the cars.
GT2 RS.
Do you know when Bruce Wayne goes into the, with Morgan Freeman, they go into the thing and he turns the lights on and bang, 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 you see all these toys.
Is that how you, I bet you had a part in designing this.
Oh, I designed all of it.
Yeah, like this glass floor in your...
I used to park my Pagani on the glass, underneath this glass floor.
Right.
So I could just look at it.
Yeah.
Then I thought, well, I can look at it there. So I just parked it there. And it was, to get it out was a mission. Sometimes I think... Right, I'm going to go there. I'm going to take the Pagani.
Yeah.
It was 20 minutes to get it out. We're there. It's just there.
Yeah. So I want to say a massive thank you for having us.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Nice to meet you. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Carl.